Good evening. This has been a joy. Sarah and I have just really had a time. You have been gracious and warm. You have fed us incredibly well. And we have just thoroughly enjoyed our stay with you. So I want to thank you very especially. I think we'll just make Rock Hill our second home, and we'll come back here every season. And maybe we'll winter here or something like that. But we really do appreciate it quite a bit. The title of our lesson tonight is Feet, F-E-E-T. And so you can well guess that I'm going to start with 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16. That was a sarcasm. It's your job to figure out why the lesson is titled Feet. Help keep you awake after all that food. Therefore, we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Psalm 73. There is a man writing this psalm who is having an inner struggle. He's a godly man. But life doesn't always go so well for him. And he sees people with abundance who are not good people. People who are disrespectful to God. People who just abound in all the things of life that people commonly think are what life is all about, even though really it's not. And he gets himself on a spiritual slippery slope. And because as he thinks about these things, well, I'm sure part of what's going on here is, well, why doesn't God take care of me? I'm a godly person. These people, they're insulting to God. They are abusive to human beings. And look at them. They've got everything. They fare sumptuously. They live with fine clothes and in wonderful houses. But in verse 15, he says, if I had said, I will speak thus, behold, I would have betrayed the generation of your children. When I pondered to understand this, it was troublesome in my sight. And it can be, can it not be? Until I came into the sanctuary of God, and then I perceived their end or their afterward. When I realized that they're going to die. And when they die, all that they have, it will be gone. But a godly person has something beyond this life, which takes us, of course, to where we're headed with all of this and where feet come in, John 13. Here's the point. We live, everybody has always lived, in a culture that prizes things that will perish with the using. We have a saying that no one disputes with regard to material things. You can't take it with you. Everybody would say, well, yeah, that's right. There have been stories told of very wealthy people as they are going to their grave in their casket. And observations are made and questions are asked. How much did he leave? And the answer is everything. Well, it's so easy to get caught up in that culture. In fact, look at the climate today with the never-ending election campaign. Mostly what we're talking about, other than what I must confess looks a lot like lip service to religion sometimes, is the economy. Jobs. This and that. What about education? And it costs so much. And it does, and I'm all for education reform. What about health care? What about anything that has to do with money? And since most people that are in the conversation are not up at the top of the ladder, who, by the way, pay 48% of the taxes in this country, then we can talk about those people. You need to stop taxing me and taking my money and start taking more from those guys, which, of course, at some point, if you take enough money from those guys, then we guys don't have jobs. But that's another story. Because all of that is really not going to matter but for just a little while. Life's but a vapor. So Paul has introduced us to, and the psalmist has introduced us to, the fact that there are really two worlds. One of them tends to absorb us. It tends to captivate us. Our senses react to these things emotionally. And we want stuff. And those who get stuff and they just seem to run roughshod over everything, including God. We just wonder, what in the world's going on? Where is the justice of this? And many people in the Bible, not just the writer of Psalm 73, have in various ways asked the question about how come they're getting away with it? What about me? Why don't you do something about it, God? And there are two places to think about, two spheres. One is the eternal, and one is the temporal. And I want us to, in a very special way, look at how those come together in a way that really affects people who are religious. People who are not really obsessed with material things, not necessarily driven by the things that perish with the using, but nevertheless may have some problems when it comes down to religion really being what it's intended to be. And with that, we look at John chapter 13. It's a fairly well-known story about Jesus washing feet. Now, before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he would depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Jesus loved people. He loved his disciples. He'd spent some very dedicated time with them, and relationships are... well, they're just so important. One of the joys of being here is Sarah and I have got to spend time with Dave and Peggy, and we just treasure our friendship with them. And to be able to chat with them and talk with them and reminisce and find out where the church actually first started meeting and all kinds of interesting things. It's just been really great. Relationships are the things of life, and Jesus has had a deep relationship with these people. He has poured his heart out for their good, and toward the end, he's probably been heartbroken more than once as they argue about who's going to be number one in the kingdom, not even understanding the spiritual nature of the kingdom, thinking it's going to be some material thing when it's not. And so Jesus is about to depart. His hour has come. All through John, my hour is not yet come, and now his hour has come. It's why he came. Could not be avoided. If it had been avoided, we wouldn't be here. We would have no hope. But he's facing this Passover. And John doesn't record the meal. Matthew, Mark, and Luke do, out of which comes the Lord's Supper. And it goes along with how John develops his gospel. It goes back to when John the Baptizer to his disciples said, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." And that theme has been part of what John has been doing. And so at this Passover, John wants to emphasize Jesus, the Lamb of God, who will take away the sins of the world, whose bones will not be broken on the cross, even as a Passover lamb, and whose blood would allow God to pass over our sins. It's the night before the horrors of the cross. During supper, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, takes action. How did Satan get in there? He just took him over, right, against his will. No, no. I grew up with old black and white horror movies. Bela Lugosi, Dracula. Some of you may recall that. And one of the things about vampire lore back in the day was a vampire can't come into your house unless you give him permission. And so one of the things they do is they trick you into inviting them in, because if you don't invite them in, they can't come in. Well, that's how Satan works. You know, we talk about Jesus standing at the door knocking on our heart. Well, guess who else is knocking? Satan. But he's not going, he can't. God won't let him knock the door down. And Jesus isn't going to knock the door down. If Satan gets in, we're going to have to invite him in. Judas has invited Satan in. And the time has come when Satan is going to put into action a plan that has already started, and he is going to let it get to the point of Judas will betray Jesus for a pitiful sum of money. It's just amazing. Now, Satan, what's our price? We sell out for a lot less sometimes, don't we? Some people get a whole lot of stuff when they sell out to Satan, but mostly, if we look back and life has not gone the way that it needs to, and we wind up being told to depart, and we look at what we got in exchange for Satan controlling our lives and having our hearts, well, man, that was nothing. What was I thinking? Well, Judas is just such a man. But that's not all there is to this. Actually, it deals more with the folks who were left behind. Verse 3. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, that he had come forth from God and was going back to God. He knows where he's going. He knows what he's got to do to get there, the in-between. But he knows where he's going. He's confident about the world that is beyond this life, the afterward. He got up from the table and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. Now, let's look at this culturally and see why this is so much dealing with how even religious people sometimes don't think like they ought to. When he gets up, takes off his outer garments, girds a towel around his waist, he is dressed like a common slave. That's what he looks like. You're in Roman culture, you're in Jewish culture, you look at someone who is attired that way, and you're looking at a common slave. So Jesus, it's not just that he's getting the towel ready, he's taking on the look of a common slave. In fact, there were many people who were not allowed to wash feet because it was just so demeaning. It was always something that was for the lowliest of servants. In fact, the strict rabbi said, no Jew can wash another Jew's feet. You got to find a Gentile to do something like that. It's just improper. In fact, in the massive amount of rabbinic writings that have survived, there was one rabbi who came home one day and his mother wanted to wash his feet just to show how much she loved him and appreciated that he was a rabbi of status. And he wouldn't let her because he said it would be demeaning. She took it to rabbinical court to see if it'd be okay if she washed her son's feet. And if it would, but since he was her son and all, it wouldn't really be demeaning. It would be an act of love. So they spent a lot of time going back and forth with that, as they did about such things as that. Washing feet, that was for the lowliest of service. Now, I don't doubt but what. They're getting ready to eat a meal. Feet should have been washed. Normally, there would be a servant there, a lowly, lowly servant, who would have taken care of that. But the upper room didn't have a servant like that. And I think it was by design that it didn't have a servant like that, because Jesus knew what he was going to do. Now, I don't doubt but what any of the disciples would have washed Jesus' feet. I think if he'd have said, hey, they'd have just all probably tripped all over themselves to be the first one who could get there to wash his feet. But he didn't do it that way. He took on the guise of a slave, and he got a basin of water, and he went around and started washing feet. And I'm sure they're all feeling somewhat chagrined by all of this, probably thinking, he shouldn't have to be doing this. We've let it come to this. We were so intent on not one of us saying, well, okay, I'm the lowliest of the group, because they were arguing about who's up here. And if I start washing feet, I'm going to admit I'm down here. And that would really be disadvantageous to my standing in the misunderstood on their part coming kingdom. But Jesus starts washing feet. He gets to Simon Peter. And the way he says this in the original language and in the context actually suggested anyway is, do you really mean you're washing my feet? Are you serious? You're going to wash my feet? No. You will not wash my feet. I will not allow this indignity on your part. I will not let you do this. Now, he'd had a moment like that before in Matthew 16. He was riding high. But who do men say that I am? Well, they give all these answers. But who do you say that I am? Well, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah. Flesh and blood didn't reveal this to you, but my Father which is in heaven. Looking good. But he says, and this is one of Matthew's breakpoints in the 16th chapter for his gospel, sort of the dividing line. From that time, he began to talk about his going to Jerusalem. That he was going to be mistreated. He's going to be beaten. He's going to be spat upon. He's going to be crucified. But on the third day, he is going to be raised up. Nobody heard that. And every time he repeated that, because that's when he started talking like that, and every time he talked about it afterward, I don't know what he's talking about. They don't want to understand, or they're troubled, or they're afraid, or something's going on. Even though he always says, I'll be raised up on the third day. They just don't have a place for that. So Simon Peter, he intervenes and says, no, Lord. And if you look at, again, the language, he's saying, essentially what he really is saying is, God would not let that happen to you. You're talking nonsense here, Jesus. The Father would never let that happen to you. No, no. And what does Jesus say? Get behind me, Satan. You're thinking about the interest of men, and you're not thinking about the interest of God. You're looking at this present world, and you're thinking that when I'm saying they're going to mistreat me and abuse me and kill me, that's all you're hearing. That's all you're letting register on your brain. You didn't hear me say, we raised up on the third day. You didn't begin to understand that without that resurrection, all life is vain. All life is vain. Get behind me, Satan. You're looking at things from a worldly point of view. You're not looking at things from a heavenly point of view. Well, here we are. He's doing it again. No, you're not going to wash my feet. No, you're never going to wash my feet. In the culture of who has status and who doesn't, who is menial and who is exalted, Simon Peter has let his thoughts enter into that world and decide, no, you're not washing my feet. He says, Simon, if I don't wash your feet, you don't have any part with me. And in characteristic Simon Peter fashion, he says, well, not my feet only, but my hands and my head. And Jesus, no, Simon. No. If you're clean and just your feet that are dirty, all you need to do is wash your feet. And there's been a lot of debate about what that's all about. I have my idea, which I will share with you. When we become Christians, we're cleansed. And if we walk in the light as He is in the light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Jesus cleanses us from all sin. We're not cleansed once and done, but we're cleansed. If we're walking in the light, we'll stay cleansed. And I think Jesus is probably symbolizing something like that here. You're clean, but to understand, you're going to still have some problems. You're still clean. You still belong to me. I hadn't thrown you out, but we'll deal with those as they come up. And accept that, hey, I'm a sinner. I'm saved by the grace of God, and I need Jesus, or I'm not going to make it. It's not once and done. Well, as Jesus starts developing this thought, we get into what I think are some fairly interesting things, not that the ones that we haven't seen are not. He says in verse 11, Jesus, after this exchange, he knew the one who was betraying him. For this reason, he said, not all of you are clean. So he's got two things going on here. You're clean, but your feet are dirty, and that's all that needs to be washed. And you're clean, but there's one of you that isn't even clean. There's one of you who has really been following Satan all along. He's the guy who used to pilfer from the box, Judas. He's the one who got all upset when Mary had put costly ointment on Jesus. We could have taken that money and we could have given it to the poor. And of course, he's not at all interested in the poor. He's the one that keeps the bag, and that'd be more money for the bag, and he'd have more to pilfer. So that's just where his heart has been. Oh, he welcomed Satan in. He invited him in. He was happy for him to be there because he was getting stuff through that relationship, such a small amount to get for such an awful loss. So Jesus says, you call me, verse 13, teacher and Lord. Rabbi be about the equivalent of teacher, Lord, which they were just beginning to kind of figure out just how much that meant. Jesus said in Luke 6:46, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do the things that I say? That's just so amazingly stark, hard to misunderstand. Why do you call me Lord, which indicates I'm the one who has the right to tell you what to do, but you don't do what I do, tell you to do when I tell you to do it. And, you know, words come out easily. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. There are going to be some people who think they've been serving Jesus, but they haven't been because they haven't been doing the will of the Father. And some of those people are going to use God's name a lot. They're going to let you know how they love Jesus and how much they care about him. And on Judgment Day, because their heart never has been given to Jesus, they're going to be told, I don't even know who you are. What a sad thing that is. He says, you call me teacher and Lord, and you're right. That is who I am. But look at what I'm doing. I'm washing your feet. In your world of culture, you can't see that. You don't have a place for it. It's got a lot of jagged edges to it. Simon was not going to have anything to do with it. He couldn't conceive of a rabbi, a teacher, a lord, a master that would wash feet. And the culture would have thought, look at that man. He's demeaning himself. Nobody will respect him because he's doing that. They missed that one, didn't they? We respect him all the more because of that. Now, just think about how we'd feel today. It'd be pretty humbling, wouldn't it be? If Jesus came to the house and he gets the towel out and a basin, and he's wearing the clothes of a lower class person, as society sees such things, and he's going to wash your feet. How would you feel? I'd feel so embarrassed. So embarrassed. I can understand how Simon Peter reacted the way that he did. But that wasn't embarrassing to Jesus. He came to serve, and serve he did. Now, verse 14, if I then, the Lord and teacher, washed your feet, you ought also to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you should also do as I did for you. Now, here's where some problems come in. Some people practice foot washing. But right before Jesus says this, he says, do you know what I have done? Well, duh, you've washed our feet. If that's all there is to it, and all he's wanting them to do is do foot washing, then that makes no sense. What do you understand what I've done? Well, he washed their feet. It's much deeper than that. He, their master and Lord, had washed their feet. And he had left an example not to arbitrarily wash feet. as some religious rite, but to do what needs to be done, because we're not too good to do it. If there is an area of service that needs to be done, well, I'm not going to, wait a minute, that's for, you know, that's for that person to do, not for me. And I understand, like the apostles in Acts 6, they can't take their time passing out food to everybody in that large group. They had prayer to consider and the ministry of the word. It wasn't that they were too good to do that. That has nothing to do with that whatsoever. It was just an efficiency move. They were not too good to do those things. In fact, they were not too good to die for Jesus, as all probably did, one maybe dying in exile. So here we've got Jesus, and he's left this example behind that we should do this. What are some ways that this can apply to us today? Do I have to get credit for things to be happy? Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount certain things that we'll do in secret that only God knows about. He talks about almsgiving. He talks about prayer. He talks about fasting. And he talks about a certain kind of prayer you do secretly. It's just between you and God, a certain kind of almsgiving, helping people out. And you don't go around, hey, look, I'm helping somebody. Hey, guess what? I'm the one that helped that person. Can we live without being credited by people for our good deeds? Or do we just have to kind of slip in there? By the way, I did that. That was me. That's a good test. And I believe that's why Jesus brings that out in the Sermon on the Mount about such things as this. But we all fight that, don't we? All of us do, I suspect. I did it. And there's a place even for taking credit. There's a place for being recognized. But there's a place for, hey, God knows and that's good enough for me. If nobody else ever knows, I'm fine with that. I am way okay with that. Well, what about things that need doing that, well, there's not going to be any glory attached to them? Ladies are particularly good with things like this. There's a lot of hard work on the meals that we've had and the cleanup and all of this. And we guys, we do some things, but mostly we eat. And you ladies, just so good to serve. And you're not down there, you know, going crazy, letting everybody know what you did. Your work speaks for itself. Well, can our work speak for itself? Can we become aware of something that needs to be done that is just totally unglamorous? Some of you are going to Haiti. I really appreciate that. That's not a fun place. It's dirty. People are dirty. It's dirty. It's just not a fun place. And I realize everybody can't go to Haiti, but I'm just giving that as an example. We all need to have some Haiti moments in our lives. Jesus certainly did. He gave up heaven that he might come to be with us. And so these two worlds, we have a tendency to look out and we see all these things that people have and we think, oh my, I'm a good person. I go to church services. I don't do this. I don't do that. And look at them. They've got all this stuff. Life always seems to turn out well for them. It seems like everything they touch turns to gold. And every time I think things are going well, something happens. The car breaks down or the roof leaks or something happens. But let us consider the afterward. Let's consider the unseen world. Abraham and Moses in the honor roll of faith in the 11th chapter of Hebrews, they both saw things that other people didn't see. You call Abram to go from Ur over to Canaan, and Canaan's wild and woolly, and Ur, they got running water. They got facilities in their houses. It's class act all the way. And he's going over to Canaan where a bunch of yahoos live. But he saw something. He saw something, a country, a city that God had made that was far better than anything on this earth. Moses, when he's in Egypt with all the splendors of Egypt, and it was, oh, Egypt back in that day was a sight to see, be overwhelmingly beautiful. He sees that it's better to suffer with God's people for Jesus' sake, the Messiah's sake, than it is for all the treasures of Egypt. We need to be able to see those things that can't be seen, because the things that can be seen are temporal. The things that cannot be seen are eternal. And Jesus is bringing that to bear here in a very religious situation, at a very tense time. He's about to die. He's about to go through the worst moment of his life, and he still has time to take the time to say, hey, look, remember this. This kind of thing is at the heart of what I came to do and what I came to teach, and the kind of Savior that I wanted you to see, and the kind of God that I wanted you to see that God is. Don't forget this. This is an example. Do it. So for us, let us learn. Learn from the Son of God who gave up heaven, who removed his outer garments, put on a towel. And if you'd seen him and didn't know who he was, you'd say, there's just a common slave washing somebody's feet. He's not worth anything. Or he wouldn't be in that dress and he wouldn't be washing feet. That's for the lowly to do. But no, that was God in the flesh doing that. And so the thing I want to leave me with, and that I want to leave you with as we close out this series of lessons, is God washing feet. Not too good to do that. We dare not be too good to serve. Let us open our eyes to ways in which our lives can be more about the unseen world, less about the seen, less caught up in all the commotions of this life. Because you know what? It really doesn't matter who gets elected president next time. It really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. God is in control. And if we're with Him, everything's going to be all right. So let us focus our attention, focus our energies on the world that we cannot see, and through our faith see it. And let that guide us in our actions. If you're not a Christian, there are so many things in this world that can be a distraction. So many things that, well, let me do this first, or let me take care of this, or let me, this is always something. What about just giving it all up? What about just, God, you've got my life. I don't deserve, like the prodigal we talked about last night, if it comes to his senses, I'm not worth anything. I'm just going to throw myself at the mercy of my Father. That kind of humility. No bargaining. No, well, I'll kind of be religious now. And it's an all-in thing. And there is a release from the burden of self that can only be found in self-denial and forgiveness. If you're not a Christian, become one. If you've heard about Jesus, the man who is God, the man who washes feet, you've come to realize who he is, and you've come to realize that he's the most important man that ever lived, and what he is about is the most important mission that there has ever been in this world, and you want to be part of that, and you know that means giving up yourself. Give yourself up. Let it go. There is nothing good about selfishness. It never has been and never will be. Come to Jesus. Put him on in baptism. Walk out of this building owned by Jesus. A person who, like Paul, could say, I don't live anymore, but Christ lives in me. For those of us who are Christians, it's so easy to be like the fellow in Psalm 73. Look at that. Look at, oh, did you see what they did? They got away with that. Oh, man, can you believe it? Here I am trying to do what's right, and look, I mean, it's just not turning out like I'd like it to. It's turning out like God will like it to, if we serve Him as servants, and if we put ourselves in the proper relationship to Him, everything's fine. Life is but a vapor, and whether we have a lot or we don't have anything, if we've got God, we have all that we need. So if you're not a Christian, become one. If you're a Christian who's struggling with this world just having a little too much of your attention, you don't necessarily have to walk down this aisle. You can right there just let God know, hey, I've let things get a little bit too much a hold of me, and I intend to do something about it. I mean, of course, if you've got something that's on your heart that you want to share with your brethren, that's another thing. But if you need to respond to this invitation song that's going to be sung, won't you please do so for Jesus' sake, as together we stand and sing.